The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks. For those of you who are expecting the Australian FinTech King today, I hope you won't be disappointed that I will be your guest host. My name is Jim Maroos, and I'm the publisher of the Retail Banking Strategy section of The Financial Brand, a digital insight and strategy publication that right now is on pace to have close to 4 million page views this year. So we're pretty excited about that. Brett is overseas today and with his family and was kind enough to entrust me with the show. I'm not a newcomer, however, to the Breaking Bank show in that I've been on the show four times previously. So I'm glad I'm on the show, and we have a great show today. We have an exciting show with that's actually quite a good follow-up to last week's show around the acceptance of mobile payments, where Brett spoke with Daniel Dotterline, CEO of Mcash, and David Michael Breyer, Director of Digital Banking for Gartner Consulting, the UK. It was a great show, a timely show, given the recent news that Square was abandoning their wallet and the ongoing speculation around NFC potentially being integrated into the new iPhone 6. While this is not a new rumor for Apple, and it seems to be the ongoing challenge every time they're about to introduce a new phone, the potential of Apple as a serious payments player with iBeacon, Passport, Book, and their huge iTunes customer base certainly can't be ignored. Since last week's show, two interesting articles were published around the challenges facing mobile wallets. One was written by Dan Rowinski on ReadWrite.com entitled, "Less Faith Facts, Mobile Wallets Are Doomed." Kind of an interesting start for an article, for sure. In his article, he has a great quote that says, "The problem comes when entrepreneurial spirit merges with an industry segment that is notoriously illogical. In other words, the payment system in the U.S. is a total mess with multiple entrenched interests, fragmented technology, and too many players." As he said, the result is basically just status quo. And I think it's interesting also that the same day, the regular host of the show, Brett King, had an article on Finextra where he's talked about the failure of Square Wallet and why the upcoming introduction of the much-hyped but unproven coin card will be, and this is in Brett's words, dead in the water. Not only does he see the process of moving all of the person's cards onto another card somewhat counterproductive, but he sees no reason why people will continue to accept a $100 fee for this privilege. At the end of the day, he just doesn't see enough value with for the consumer's perspective, let alone the merchant's. Today, our guests are going to expand upon last week's discussion and provide some additional insight into why the noise around mobile wallets is so much greater than the consumer adoption of the technology, why merchants aren't pushing harder for mobile payments, and why the U.S. is lagging basically all other regions in the world in this area. Today's guests, I'm happy to welcome Cherian Abraham, the mobile and commerce payments lead for Experian, and Will Graylin, CEO of the innovative payment device company Loop, to discuss new payment options and how our industry will eventually be able to replace the Costanza wallet, for lack of a better term, the wallet on the show that where it was about 6 inches thick and he had everything in it. So today is great to have on the show a friend of mine who knows obviously much more about payments marketplace than I'll ever know, Cherian Abraham from Experian. How are you today, Cherian?
I'm good, Jim. Thank you for inviting us. Great to be here.
So where are you calling from today?
I am calling from home, Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, the weather's there, as nice there as it is in the Midwest, finally. I think I'm afraid that we're going to have summer before we know it, and we're not going to have much of a spring. But so, you know, as recent research shows that despite all the discussion in the marketplace around mobile payments, the penetration of mobile payments is still minuscule. In fact, I wrote about this on the Financial Brand, I guess it was last week, about the fact that, you know, despite, you know, millions upon millions, hundreds of millions of dollars being spent on promoting mobile payments, the uptake is, according to the Fed, been less than half of 1%. How do you explain the lack of acceptance by the general consumer?
So, again, I don't think it's fair to place the question of the lack of acceptance at the feet of the consumer, especially when, you know, and I agree with what Dan wrote, that there is a complete misalignment of interest in business model, at least in the payments landscape today. I spend the last couple of days.
Okay, let's see if you can't call back. You know, it's interesting because it you know, payments, as we know, is a real game where it involves merchants, it involves consumers, it involves the obviously the card companies and all the players that are trying to have an impact on the whole payments marketplace. And with so many players, it the disruption is fragmented at best and quite you know, there's no logical place to go. There's no one player that's dominant. This is the test of a guest host, is the fact that I have a lot of respect for Brett King, who has to fill the dead air when things don't exactly go as planned. But, you know, as I said, the acceptance of cash, of all things, is still extremely high in the U.S. And you know, I think the Fed study said that the use of checks, while going down precipitously, is still, you know, 17 times greater than the use of mobile payments. And you know, as we've seen, it's not an easy marketplace. It's not an easy process. ISIS is currently quoting quite extensive numbers from the standpoint of their acceptance rate. But when you put it in the context of how many people are in the U.S., you know, not only is it not that many people, but it's also a situation where it's not used everywhere. Even those times when we do have a player such as Square, somebody else who makes some headway, Google, we don't find it being used extensively. It's used in a few places, very much like Starbucks mobile payments, where, you know, they have probably the best track record, but it's still a Starbucks payment process. We can go to Will and then come back to Cheerion. We're going to add a little bit here, but you know, we'll get back to Cheerion in a bit. But again, we have Will Graylin. He is the CEO of the startup firm Loop, who recently introduced a unique device, one that I have, that actually bypasses the card swipe process entirely, replicating a card swipe with right now about a 1.5 by 1.5 inch fob. So Will, tell me a little bit about your history in payments, but also what drove you to create Loop, and a little bit about what Loop is.
Sure. A little background on myself and how I started Loop with George Wallner about a year and a half ago. And after selling my fourth company and the second one in the payment industry, and having been in the mobile payment industry for about a dozen years at that point, we had been dealing with mobile payments with card acceptance side. So we were one of the largest suppliers of Square-like devices to people like PayPal and PayAnywhere and Intuit and so forth. And we saw that only was one component of mobile payments. But the other components of mobile payments, including the mobile wallet, has yet to flourish. Like you said earlier, there has been literally billions of dollars spent between the operators, the handset makers, the people like Google and others on mobile wallets. And why hasn't it taken off? So George, my co-founder, and I were thinking about this exact same problem, and we came to the conclusion that fundamentally, it's a terrible experience for the consumer. It's not really solving the convenience of what a wallet promises. And by definition, a wallet is supposed to be something that holds all of your credentials, that allows you to use it wherever, and particularly it allows you to pay just about anywhere. And if the existing mobile wallets can only allow you to load a few cards and allow you to use it at less than 10% of the places, then you're certainly not abandoning your existing wallet and your existing plastic cards. So you're still going to carry your Costanza wallet, if you will, with you all the time. So it hasn't solved the fundamental problem. And tapping to pay it by itself is not necessarily a convenience well enough. It's really how do I solve a problem with a supercomputer in my pocket and try to get rid of at least most of my plastic cards and hopefully leave behind another big item that I have to carry around with me other than my phone and my keys. So having said that, we felt that the biggest problem that has hindered mobile wallets is that mobile devices don't have a communication protocol to talk with the point of sale. And if you can't get the mobile device to talk to the point of sale, then you can't solve that last inch problem to drive towards ubiquitous acceptance of a mobile wallet. It's like having a bullet train that says we're going to go 120 miles an hour instead of 20 miles an hour, and we're going to create and facilitate a lot more commerce, but having no tracks that can reach the, you know, all the stations that are there. And that is basically a bullet train that goes nowhere. And you're not going to get consumers to go and buy tickets and jump on that train. So the analogy that we use is that the MagStripe infrastructure, the train that are the plastic cards in our wallet today, those rails have been laid over the last four decades, and they go just about everywhere. And but because the containers that are attached to those trains, which are these MagStripe that holds our card data, those are not so secure, so people have been effectively almost like chasing down the trains on their horsebacks and robbing them. Still, commerce is going to flow, but the insecurity of the MagStripe containers caused the industry to go say, hey, let's go ahead and lock down that those containers, and let's create something much more secure. And in about two decades or so, people started implementing EMV. Well, the much more secure containers happen to not ride on the existing rails, so people have labored hard the last two decades to build new rails for the EMV containers. Now, that's about 50% done worldwide. In the U.S., we've barely even started, so there's a lot more tracks to lay. And that effort is going to continue, and that effort will take place, but it's going to take a long time. Now, fast forward to mobile devices, where we say, hey, guess what? We have now this bullet train called mobile, and let's go ahead and figure out how we can get mobile really going. And the problem is, there is no shortcut. If you want these new mobile trains to run, those trains don't ride on either the MagStripe rail nor the EMV rail, so you have to build a new set of rails. And we just simply don't have the time to do that, and the consumers are not going to shift until that happens. So what Loop did is Loop invented a technology called magnetic transmission. And magnetic transmission is basically a new bullet train that allows mobile devices to, in fact, ride exactly on the existing MagStripe rails that happens to be already running to just about every station. So we can now then carry not only the static data that is already contained in our cards, in our wallets today, by allowing a consumer to giving them a little reader for them to swipe in all of their existing cards and immediately load just about every card that they have in their physical wallet to transfer them digitally into a secure storage inside a loop device and allow those devices then to transmit the card of their choice into an existing point of sale. So by solving that particular problem, we have now finally solved the last inch problem, and we now have a bullet train that rides on existing rails without having to wait. And we can talk a little bit more about this, Jim, also. But we can transmit not only static data, which is today ubiquitous and prevalent, but we can also transmit each one of those cards to be dynamic track data, much like EMV, and to be able to deliver EMV-like security on the existing rails through mobile without a heavy infrastructure cost of converting all of the merchant's POS terminal to a new contactless mobile acceptance solution. So that's a little background on what we do.
Well, you know, as I mentioned, I have one of your devices. I've used one of your devices, and it's quite a unique experience. Number one, you always get the looks from the cashier when you say, hey, I'd like to use this instead of the card. They're always skeptical, and then they go, geez, it works. But you also have to get used to some behavior changes, especially in the U.S. with restaurants where the payments terminal is not close to the place where you're making the purchase, but you find ways around that. We're gonna take a break in a second here. After the break, we'll come back to Loop a little bit, and we do have Cherian back, so we'll also talk to Cherian about some of the marketplace changes. But you're with Jim Roos right now, sitting in for Brett King today on Breaking Banks. We'll be back after this short break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's kony.com/BK.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks without Brett King today. This is Jim Roos from the digital publication, The Financial Brand. I'm sitting in for Brett today, who is spending some time abroad with his family. Before the break, we were initially talking with Cherian Abraham from Experian, but we unfortunately dropped his phone call. But we also talked to Will Graylin from the startup firm Loop, who have developed a device that basically gives you digital payments without using a phone, but uses basically tricks, for lack of a better term, tricks the current card readers into thinking that there's a card involved when actually there's simply a fob. So, Will, you're talking about the loop as it currently exists. I know you have a couple things coming up in the next month or so. Can you tell us a little bit about the phone case?
Sure. We have a number of different devices that are coming, but fundamentally what Loop is a payment platform and a secure account for consumers to be able to put all of their cards inside of their accounts and be able to use it in a variety of devices. Now, the magic behind Loop is actually this loop of inductive coil that transmits a magnetic signal. And that solution effectively allows us to contactlessly transmit to a existing point of sale without any change to the point of sale. Now that can be embedded, that little piece of technology called the loop can be embedded into a variety of form factors. Now we know that mobile users today are going to have all different kinds of form factors that they carry, whether it is a smartphone, a case on their phone, a fob, or even smartwatch. And we can embed Loop inside of a variety of devices for a very cost-effective price. In fact, to a smartphone, especially to a smartphone that already has NFC, we can even share the same antennas, and we can effectively embed Loop into a mobile phone for less than $1.
Now, so, Will, what you're saying then is the Loop technology that currently exists in a fob that as I said, bypasses the rails but uses the rails of a current card reader, you're saying that you'll have the ability to either embed in a phone or a case or anything else the kind of technology that will give people the convenience of mobile payments without having to change the current infrastructure on the merchant side.
Correct. And we believe that for users, they might carry around many different kinds of devices. And we're coming up with all kinds of mobile devices or attachments or accessories that allow them to use their existing phones without having to wait for the new phones, and for the new phones to also have those embedded, and even new smartwatches and smart wearables to embed Loop inside for them to access their Loop account and be able to use their cards just about anywhere. Now, the new device that you mentioned earlier, we're about to launch in June. You'll probably see some news once it comes out. Is called the Charge Case. It's basically like a Mophie case that gives you extra battery power. And we know that there are a lot of people that carry Mophie cases. We basically have Loop now embedded inside that case so that you not only can charge your phone, but you can also have a mobile wallet that works just about everywhere. And then right after that,
this is one of these interesting things where this is maybe why we can't get mobile technology to work very well. You're breaking up on your phone. I don't know if you're moving around or something. I just want to make sure that you could hear you. It just was very broken up.
Can you hear me any better now?
It's still doing the same thing. We're going to do a little ad-libbing here again. So basically that's Will Graylin from Loop, and he's talking about how it can be embedded both into a phone case and a phone. Will, if you want to call back, I will jump to Cherian here and get back to the where we started. And we've had a little technical challenges today, but I've been on the other side of this a couple times, so I'm kind of familiar with how this can happen. Cherian, you know, as I mentioned, there's been a challenge about the overall acceptance of mobile payments overall, and I'm not too sure if that's something that's going to be dogging us for a while here. What do you see as a major challenge on acceptance? And as you had started to say, it's just not a consumer thing, but can you tell us a little bit about what some of the challenges are around the mobile payments right now?
So I would say that today, and at least for the next few years going forward, the primary focus from a retail SLS, from a banking standpoint, would be around EMV. And I think we all expected EMV to go away, and probably just before the target breach happened, nobody really even thought that EMV was going to happen. And now that it's here, here to stay, you effectively have retailers realigning their focus to really change their terminals if they haven't already, to EMV-capable terminals. Issuers are going to be focused around issuing chip and PIN cards, And there is a whole debate around whether, you know, whether it's going to be chip and pen, chip and signature, and the economics around that, as well as the fraud, the questions around fraud around it from a retail standpoint. So the debate has somewhat shifted off late to really serve the needs of today. So, and that was really the topic of a lot that was discussed over the last couple of days at a retail conference that I was at. Now, on the same, that does not mean that retailers are taking their eyes away from mobile. So MCX, it's still apparently going full steam in terms of towards an arbitrary launch at some point. They have spoken about how, what kind of a shape and form that it would take, whether they would, launch a trial initially with the 5 million employees that they collectively have, and try to drive traction that way. So retailers are very much focused on mobile at a variety of ends, but I still see a very convoluted approach across the industry in terms of trying to solve this pain point for the consumer. Even if, and they're not really aligned across the board to serving the needs of everybody. There is no business model that exists today that takes the interests of the ecosystem as a whole. And ISIS is a clear example of that. And so the difficulties that each of them, faces, the lack of traction that each of them has is a testament of the limitation. So taking the NFC as an example, so far the efforts around ISIS had a plethora of costs and complexities around scaling, around getting your cards into the wallet, and still having to struggle with the fact that ISIS was no near a consumer brand that that card issuers or retailers were, and so having to struggle with that, the difficulties of and the complexities in terms of getting your card on an ISIS wallet, the costs around it, as well as the fees that the carriers and gatekeepers were extracting from it, all led to pretty much the lack of traction that you see within ISIS today, despite the numbers that they have seemingly announced last week. That being said, I think going forward, the lack of traction is not really a reflection in terms of the technology that's being used by the solution. I think we are at a point where we can decouple from the technology debate and look at any and every available capability on a phone to be able to do payment. And I think we are at the cusp of something like that happening.
Well, I think, another issue, too, is there's just a matter of scale. There are just so many different solutions competing for earshot, and that's assuming people are listening. But I just in my own situation, we sometimes get caught up in our own self talk, between each other in the industry, and we forget about the fact that when I mention to somebody I'm going to pay them with, let's say, Square Cash, and I'm going to have it go right to their email, and all they have to do is accept it via their email address. Or even I talk about mobile deposit capture and being able to make a deposit through a mobile device. The vast majority of people still will shake their head and wonder what you're talking about. Do you think anybody's going to – how long is it going to take for any of the players to get the kind of momentum or to get the kind of acceptance that is going to be recognized by what I'll call the general public, the beyond the fast starters, the early adopters?
So, Jim, you're asking me to look into my crystal ball, which is actually in another room, so it's going to take me a while to get to it. But you're right. Even from a bank's perspective today, I've heard from many that, they're not sure that there will be another home run for mobile, like the mobile remote check deposit, and that they are reconciling, with what may be that we are going to see ones and twos for a while. And the problem with that view is that, again, we have no way to know what the customer would find appealing at the end of the day. So these hokey sticks of growth that, that we all see and hear, they are truly random. But that being said, there are undercurrents, like, for example, EMV, tokenization, and who knows, even biometrics as a consumer authentication approach. These things will have a lasting impact. So I feel that on the surface there, we probably will burn through any number of solutions, because there are seemingly unending amounts of private equity that's actually coming into this. I think we will see many more solutions come up, try to scale, and then crash and burn. But there are undercurrents that will shift the overall ecosystem towards using ultimately your phone to pay. And whether that's actually going to be visualized at the retail point of sale, or whether you'll see scaling of more payment experiences such as Uber or line busting or things of that nature, I think it's too early to say, you know, which ones will really matter to the consumer. I would actually make the argument that the latter ones probably does make more sense for the consumer, because these are newer experiences. You don't really go through an Uber experience and then take your plastic card at the end of it and then swipe against the terminal. It would almost seem dissonant in terms of how that how payment is almost tacked on to the end of that the Uber travel experience. The reason that the payment is invisible at the end of that experience is because it's by design. And we will see more use cases such as that flourish because people will warm up to those experiences, not because payments is invisible, because those experiences feel complete and comprehensive in their own nature, not as where you're trying to use a mobile phone to really tack on at the end of, you know, of purchasing something at a retail store. So those use cases will take a while for it to mature. And as I mentioned in the beginning, those business models have to evolve to where every party within that value chain needs to feel that they are well represented, as well as that they are well compensated, and that you're not adding additional players into that value chain who's going to split the pie into far more pieces, rather that that we are providing a pretty competent platform that allows every party to leverage the capabilities that's on the device to seemingly make commerce simple and transparent.
Well, it's interesting. The obviously, when you talk about having the embedded parties and have the process more like an Uber experience, we keep on talking about it. We keep on making reasons why it won't happen. But, the elephant in the room is obviously Apple with the power to leverage their already embedded payments process with the iTunes network and their wallet application, and the potential to use the iBeacon technology and other things. And there's obviously discussions around security and all that. But, when you really come down to it, one that could disrupt the marketplace and do it in such a way that the players are still all in their place, even though the information transfer won't be the same, is again Apple. I mean, I think everybody's waiting for that, potentially the other shoe to drop.
You're right. But at the same time, I've spoken with a few retailers in the last couple of days who are moving to EMV terminals, and some of them being contactless terminals. And they're worried that if Apple does choose to come out with no NFC on their Nest iteration of their phone and choose to go in a different direction, like their Bluetooth, those contactless terminals do not support Bluetooth, and therefore they are almost fearsome, almost afraid that they will get lost out on that opportunity. So there is, again, there's a misalignment there in terms of technology trying to catch up on the point of sale side with something that is essentially a consumer hardware device, which seemingly the most secure consumer hardware device in the form of an iPhone 5S, to be exact. And there is an imbalance in terms of how these things will ultimately come to matter. So you spoke about security, and I want to talk about one thing there. We had breaches across the board. We've had breaches on the point of sale. We had data at rest being compromised. Now, there is a very subtle difference in terms of how Apple sees security in the iOS framework. So the Touch ID sensor, and I want to make a case to why Apple is pretty well positioned in terms of answering the questions around security around iOS. Between the touch ID sensor and where that fingerprint is actually taken to verification, which is the secure enclave on the A7 processor, there is about half an inch of wire between the sensor and the secure enclave. And Apple right. encrypts the fingerprint data before it leaves the sensor and while it is in transit. So even for a half an inch worth of wire, it actually takes that into consideration that it needs to encrypt. And it encrypts it with a key that's not known to anybody other than the phone itself. So it's actually a unique ID that's fused into the application processor when that chip is fabricated. So the levels of sophistication that has gone into creating the iPhone 5S device, and this goes back even probably one iteration before, the levels of sophistication that has gone into creating the security framework is unbelievable. And and a point of sale or even a smart card chip pales in comparison to that level of that scale and that sophistication. So I think
right.
we need to have to look at that and look at Apple and having to ask for parity with, what a point of sale can do or what a smart card chip can do. I sympathize with Apple that they would seemingly see their solution as far superior than what anything else that's out in the market. And yet they would have to qualify for the card not present rate when they're trying to take, one of the cards that are on the iTunes framework and essentially having to use that for a customer at the retail point of sale. So those are things that Apple cannot solve by themselves.
Right.
They certainly need the networks and the issuers to work in tangent. And I think there are challenges there that need to be solved. So Apple cannot solve it by themselves, but they certainly can throw another wrench into the problem.
Yeah, every time we've talked about this many times, you and I have, and every time you take a step forward, you think, in a way we're also taking a step back in it, and we sometimes forget how basic the consumer needs are, which is, even the education of the fact that the debit or credit card have security limits where there's no risk to the consumer. We've not even addressed that kind of concept with the mobile device, but we need to take another break here. But when we come back, I'd like to bring both of our guests together to kind of like get an idea of what the future payments may look like. I want to hear from Will Graylin from Loop again about before we broke up a little bit about his what's down the road for him and again try to wrap it all up the best we can for today. I think every time we have one of these shows, you end up getting – you read the journals the next day and you realize that some of the things we said are right, some of the things are being disputed. So you're with Jim Roos today, taking over for Brett King, who's on the road. I'm from The Financial Brand, and we'll be back in a few.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Attend Payments 2014 to meet the forward-thinking leaders and disruptors who are transforming how we pay and get paid. Get a glimpse into the next wave of payments innovations and challenges through fast-paced interactive demonstrations, educational sessions, and a buzzing exhibit hall. Register now at payments.nacha.org. Payments 2014 is presented by NACHA, the Electronic Payments Association, the recognized leader in payment system education. The Payments Conference, transform imagination into strategic innovation. Register today at payments.nacha.org.
What do business and sports have in common? Both are based on competition, and the goal of each is the same, to win. If you're in business, you need an edge over your competitors. You need to innovate and improve. You need to make adjustments to stay ahead of your competition. Tune in to The Business Locker Room with Kelly Riggs. Get the playbook and the coaching you need to improve your business performance. The Business Locker Room airs live every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790.
That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks with Brett King. You're with Jim Roos today, who's sitting in for Brett King. I've had the privilege of being the first and, at this point, only guest host. I'm not too sure if he'll do it again, but I'm sitting in for Brett King, who's gone this week. But we're talking about new innovations in mobile payments. And with us today, we have Cheyenne Abraham from Experian and Will Grayland from Loop. And we've had a little technical difficulties during the show, so I want to get back to you, Will, a little bit about, in a little bit, tell us about what's coming up down the road. I know I have my fob, and I'm looking forward to getting my my charger case or my phone case. What else is on the horizon?
So thanks, Jim. As you know, we have one singular focus at Loop here, and that is to create a great consumer experience and to fundamentally replace the wallet, ultimately, that we carry with us. And to that end, the Loop fob was the first of its kind to get into the marketplace that you can use. Beyond that, we have the Loop charge case, which is, as I was starting to say last time, a Mophie-like charger that gives you a case that you can give you extra battery. But it also has the Loop capability to store all your cards securely and be able to transmit them to just about any POS. And beyond that, we also have a Loop card case that's coming. It's a case that lets you have a small little 6-millimeter card that you can slide in and out, give to waiters and bartenders if you wanted to, or leave it in the phone and transmit all of your cards. And we have a little slot that allows you to put a couple of backup cards as well, your driver's license, maybe a backup card, so that literally with that device, which, by the way, I'm talking to you on with my card case, I no longer carry my physical wallet. I have completely left it behind. And that's the goal that we're trying to drive towards, is to give consumer the experience of freeing themselves from having to carry that extra wallet. And the biggest advantage, of course, we have is our ability to have mobile devices talk with existing point of sale without any change to the point of sale. Now, beyond that, from a roadmap standpoint, as I mentioned earlier, we're currently working with some of the largest device OEMs to embed Loop inside of their devices for less than a dollar, so that eventually you might, you know, get your new phone and Loop will be inside those devices. So one step at a time, but we are very excited about coming out with a solution that can free people from their traditional wallets. And lots more to come for Loop.
And what kind of acceptance have you had already for the Loop device, the fob and all that? How many users do you currently have?
Well, we can't talk about the number,
but
I can tell you that we have lots and lots of excited users in demand that are out there. We sold out of our first batch, and we just fulfilled our second batch of manufacturing shipment. And but a lot of people are also very excited about where the charge cases is coming, and the card cases, and the other device form factors that allow them to carry less devices, so they don't carry an extra fob on their keychain. They just simply carry their phone with them. So what I can tell you is the consumer experience has been fantastic. We have many of our users today that are using their mobile devices to pay more than they do plastic cards or cash. Now, this is a first in mobile payment history or payment history. And traditionally, we have people have been, you know, taking a long time to get to where plastic overcame check and cash. Today, for the very first time, we have users that are using their Loop fobs, and particularly their Loop charge case from the beta users, more than 10 to 15 times per week. So that is
pretty amazing.
Fantastic for us. Fantastic for
us.
Now, of course,
Will, you know, as far as people who might be interested in finding out more about the Loop device or actually getting one, where do they go?
So right now you can go to looppay.com. And you can order the devices right from there. The fob is for $39. The
charge cases for $99. It'll be shipping next month. And we'll have in August the card case shipping, and then a follow-on a number of other devices. And then later in the summer, you'll also see us in retail outlets as well, and we'll be announcing those into the summer. We have several deals cooking.
Well, that's pretty exciting. I know I've been following you for over a year now, and it's been an exciting journey, and I know I've enjoyed using my Loop device. It's always fun to see the expression. That by itself is worth it because it's still something very new. Cheerion, I'm going to come back to you now and ask you. We have the Loop device. We have Coin coming out in the next, I think, 30 days or so. What is your thought about consumers paying for a mobile payment device that is still somewhat foreign to them, beyond what I'll call the early adapters? And I know this kind of puts you in a strange situation because you actually have one of the people on the phone, but I'm just wondering, what is your take on if people are going to be willing to pay for this kind of option?
So let me come at it from a different angle. I think we would all agree that there are enough entrepreneurs who bet that they have built a better mousetrap. And I think it's also a testament of the fact that the payment ecosystem as a whole is pretty messed up today. And it's cliched, but we all say that water finds a way. Right? Somebody told me recently that if you poke a hole in the center of a growing leaf, it does not die. It grows around that hole. So I think we can all say, that let the market ultimately choose, the solution that actually appeals to the consumer and let that build scale. So what has happened historically is that we've anointed one radio in the case of NFC as really the next payment modality, right? I mean, we pretty much chose that as to be the only way forward without consulting with the ecosystem as a whole, with merchants specifically, because merchants have been highly suspicious of that approach because they saw contactless as always as being, as an extension of plastic, where networks who had historically said on or off cards, merchants have always suspected that we will mean ultimately on or off devices. And so, therefore, they were looking at contactless as something that would ultimately end up being card present plus. So there has been, and I don't necessarily agree with that approach, but they certainly had enough evidence as to why they would want to suspect that would be the direction that networks would take it. So, rightly or wrongly, we had chosen one radio as really the only way forward. And I think what the market as a whole has rejected that notion. And I think if we want payments to be invisible in the end, then we should be less hung up on the hardware that enables it. I think we spend too much time debating the benefits of one radio over another on a phone. I think the time is now to step beyond that debate and talk about using any and all available hardware and capability on a device, and which collectively can combine to meet whatever may be the issue of risk mitigation requirement, and solve the problem in creative ways. Now, Loop may be one, Coin may be another, HCE could potentially be another. And I think there does not have to be one single standard for enabling payment. I think let it be defined by the use case, the customer, the optimal customer experience, and ultimately the risk, the risk management needs. So I think we have come to a point where we really don't need to anoint a solution as the chosen one going forward. I think the market would dictate it, but essentially, what's upon us is the need of the hour is we need to create the framework that can support these solutions going forward. And the framework are things like tokenization, things like creating an approach towards consumer authentication that is dependent upon the device so that we can essentially do KYC for a consumer with relatively less friction. There are far more important things that we need to build today that are at the fundamental level that will help the next stage of solutions to really flourish, including Coin, including Loop and other solutions that may be out there at that time. So I think it's time for us to stop fantasizing around a radio or a technology. I think the solution really requires the benefit of the doubt that I think ultimately the goal is to build a framework and then let the market dictate as to what's the chosen solution.
Well, that's I mean, that's a great ending to this segment, because it really does get down to, you know, unless you have a value proposition that's better than what's out there today, and then you know, that's interesting. I mean, it's interesting where we come back with it. It's going to be interesting to see how the consumer decides this. And you know, I know Brett always ends the show by saying, "What comes next?" Well, I'm going to do a little play off of that whole "What comes next" to talk about something that you know, before the end of the day, that should consider, our listeners should consider, and that is Next Bank USA being held in it's a conference being held in Boston on June 11th and 12th. Next Bank USA is it's the first time it's come to the U.S. It's been in Singapore, it's been in Central America, it's been in Sydney, Australia. I actually participated in Sydney last fall, and it's a really unique scenario. It's a situation that you have a TED-style speaking environment with innovators inside and outside of banking, and a lot of the people who are regular participants and guests on Breaking Banks, such as Ron Shevlin, Brett King, obviously, Bradley Lemer, J.P. Nichol, and others are going to be both speaking at the event, as well as helping to host the event. So I would encourage people to go to nextbankusa.com to check it out. It's a really, really good program, and it's great for those people who want to be on the cutting edge of what's going on. Also, I don't want to get off the line here today without asking Cheerion, how do people – I know you have a blog. What is a blog, and how do we stay in touch with you?
It does not go to droplabs.com. That would take you to somebody else. But droplabs.co is the blog, and I'm on Twitter as well, so that would be another way to get to the blog. And I routinely publish analysis, so it'd be once a month maybe. And I'm pretty bad at writing, so I'm not as prolific as I used to.
Okay. Well, yeah, I know we've had a lot of discussion about your writing, and it's you really have a handle on what's going on out there, and I appreciate you and Will both join us today. Again, my name is Jim Marus. I am one of the writers for the Financial Brand Digital Publication. We're a publication out there that on a daily basis gives insight and ideas, research, recaps around what's going on in the retail banking area for both bank and credit union marketers. We also host a once-a-year marketing forum called the Financial Brand Forum that happens in April. We just had one. We had, in our first year, we had over 400 guests, which is nice. But at the end of the day, the payments area is going to continue to challenge us and keep things exciting. I'd like to thank our guests this week who shared some really great ideas, and despite some technical difficulties, we all endured, and they made my job easier. Cheerion Abraham from Experian and Will Graylin from Loop. And I certainly thank you for helping me make my maiden voyage as guest host both fun and insightful. So that's another week of Breaking Banks with Brett, without Brett King. Brett will be returning next week to host the show at the regular time. I hope all of our listeners from the U.S. have a great long weekend. And for those who don't have a long holiday weekend coming up, I hope you have a great weekend anyway. This has been Breaking Banks with Brett King.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.